Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Naked Englishman podcast. I'm Richard Vobes. This is the audio diary of my life. On, one can only presume, it's the next day from the day before, Tuesday, 27th of January, and it's just gone 8:30 in the morning on a very wet and miserable day. The wind was howling around last night down here on the seafront, and I say seafront, I'm not quite on the seafront, but I'm, you know, the town is on the seafront. And yeah, cars are all lining up, ready to go to work, going around, spraying everywhere, puddles on the road. I dare say there's been a bit of flooding, which would be a bit of a shame if you are on the way somewhere and are hauled up by it. I hope that you are not. Anyway, so that's where we are at the moment. What am I going to do? I've got some water. I've just had a bath with Epsom salts. And the thing about Epsom salts, of course, is it's got a lot of magnesium in it. And you absorb the magnesium, of course, through the skin, one of the best ways to absorb things, and also dangerously absorb things, like all the nasties in the sky and the Wi-Fi and everything else. But anyway, and because the thing about having an Epsom salt bath is you need to have some water afterwards, because you've got a lot of salt in the system and you can dehydrate quite quickly. So I don't want to do that, so I've managed to pour myself a glass of water. I was very kindly delivered the light paper, issue number 65, and oops, I've just knocked a tin of tobacco on the floor. Let's kick it over there for the minute, so he's whicking down. Right, let's have a look at the headline here. Is there a climate crisis? And then it talks about what they claim, the Earth's temperature, the cause of CO2, and so we must have change. But to see the centre pages for what the science really says, quite right. These are things that we must keep reminding people, that there is no need for the measures. Now, some people will disagree, of course, that we need the 17 sustainable goals, that we need the net zero targets, and we need all this extra stuff when we were perfectly fine before all this myth came around about global warming and all that. Anyway, we know it's all part of the plan. We know it's all part of trying to persuade the people to be slaves, continue to be slaves, I suppose. But I think more people are waking up than ever before, so I think they're in big doo-doo personally, but they'll still throw stuff at us and it won't necessarily be comfortable, because they, in theory, they have got everything in their power. You know, they've got control of the weather, they've got access to the military and bombs, and they've got access to the media to persuade people. You know, you'd think that they ought to win. However, I think they are losing. Anyway, that's not what I wanted to talk about today. I wanted to talk a little bit about, I've been watching, because I have been convalescing recently from this problem that I had, which is now, you know, pretty much gone. Well, I'm just getting my strength back, I suppose. There's a few little aches in the shoulders, but most of it's really come on from where I was. Blimey. Anyway, because I had been doing a lot of convalescing and I couldn't do very much, and the weather had been miserable, so we couldn't go onto the land. And when I was unable to really move my arms and my fingers, did a lot of watching of things, obviously, you know, and reading. Well, one of the things I did watch was revisiting some of Christopher Hitchens' work. And Christopher Hitchens, for those that are unaware, was a writer and a journalist and an atheist, a self-claimed atheist. And he did not believe that there was any form of God, and that the Bible was a fairy tale. And that was his stance for many times, and he would argue and debate with many, many people, and a very educated man, and in many ways very likeable. Whether you agreed with him or not, he was very, in his public appearances that I've seen, very gentlemanly like, as opposed to somebody who rants and raves. And he was using logic a lot of the time to put his point across. Now, he wasn't saying, he said he didn't believe there was a God. He didn't say there wasn't a God. He said, I cannot prove that there is no God, but there seems to be no evidence for him. And he thought that there was nothing to any of the mystical and superstitious and mysterious stuff. And I agree with him to a certain extent, but as I've mentioned before on The Naked Englishman, I think the spark, the life, whatever we are, does not die, which Christopher Hitchens thought all came to an end, and thought we were just really the result of random atoms and things having come to this amazing thing, but it would all just, once we die, we fizzle out, and that there was no divine source or order or conscious order, I suppose, in all of this. And his arguments were, you know, in terms of what the Bible says and what other religions say, and, you know, what you're expected to think of this so-called benevolent God that produces so many people and then kills them in various ways, many of them as children, it seems, you know, weird. And one of his lovely arguments, I think, is when he says, you know, men have been around for however many 100,000 years, and then only in the last 2,000 to 3,000 years did we start to sort of have this one religion, that if you didn't believe this one religion, it was the final religion, and as a result of this, the sun came down and suffered for all mankind. He said, well, you know, that's all very well for us now, but what about the tens or hundreds of thousands of years that man had been around when this so-called benevolent God didn't exist, or was not present, or hadn't spoken to anybody, or whatever? And it may, of course, it may well be that it had, and they didn't write it down in the same way as they write it down now. I mean, I don't know. I haven't studied all these different peoples and all their different religions and things. But clearly people have had some belief in something, whether that be the sort of paganism business of believing in the elements and the sun and the moon, or the Romans with their various gods overlooking us, pulling the strings, or a more sort of single deity that governs you. But I couldn't find him saying a great deal on things like meditation and the sort of spirituality that you find in, say, the yogis or Buddha or those sort of things, or the Far East. I don't know that he did. I'm not saying he didn't, because I haven't studied him greatly, but I would like to have heard his opinion on those areas. But I think he was wrong. Now, of course, nothing I say will change anybody else's beliefs on what they believe, and I don't want to upset anybody's personal belief. You know, we're all entitled to believe and think what we like, you know, in theory. I mean, the government would have us obviously believe one narrative, such as global warming, man-made global warming, and that we are responsible, etc. But we, you know, in reality, we are all little islands, and we all peer through one set of eyes, and we have this one consciousness in our, well, wherever it is. It's not necessarily in our bodies, but it may be surrounding our bodies and what have you. Anyway, whatever. We're all individuals, and yet we're all, it seems to me, part of the same, but you may disagree. And I don't want to upset anybody else's ideas, but I do agree with Christopher Hitchens on the lack of evidence to prove, and the illogical nature of what we're asked to believe from a deity that is outside of us. In some of the, you know, the basic standard religions, whether that's Christianity or Islam or, you know, some of these others, I'm still very much, because I've had more time, I suppose, recently to sort of cogitate about this whilst convalescing and smoking the pipe and in thought on what I think about life and the purpose of life and who we are and what we are. You know, it seems so obvious to me that the God factor, if you want to call it that, is us. It's internal, it's inside it. And when I say inside, I'm not talking about inside the physical body or even inside our physical head and brain. That is not really where we are, I don't think. We have the appearance that we have it in there, but I'm not at all convinced that we are limited into this body. We are in one way, and by golly, when I was really crippled and in pain, I wished I could just leave the body. The soul could just go and float about for a bit and leave the body in its anguish and you know, let it heal and then come back when it's done. And I dare say that is possible, but I was unable to do it because of the pain factor seemed to have locked my soul and consciousness in this physical realm. And at night time it would be difficult sleeping, as I've alluded to probably in previous Naked Englishmans. But the point I suppose I want to get to is that the divine, whatever it is, the spark of life, whatever it is a, it's not something in the 3D world, but it's something somewhere else. And a lot of people will say, well, it's deep within you. And that isn't very helpful, I don't think, because in a way it gives you the impression that it's somehow in your body, but it's not in your body. I don't think that is in your body. I mean, this part of your spirit, it seems to me, inhabits the body. Part of the you is there, but there's the other part is somewhere else, connected to everything, probably, connected to the universe, whatever that is. I mean, you know, we use these terms, and they're not really the right terms, like, you know, the universe. What does that really mean? When you think of that, you think of solar systems and stars and black space and shining dots in the sky and spaceships running around. And, you know, you say things like trust the universe, as if you're talking about star systems and solar systems and things and suns and black holes and wormholes and all of that sort of nonsense. You're not really, are you? You're not really saying trust the what? The mechanical universe of planets whizzing around stars at whatever speed and spinning, if that even happens, if space even exists, as in a universe or Milky Way and, you know, Andromeda and all of those things, do they really exist? We observe them, but then we observe a lot of things in the 3D world that I don't think exists. And do things exist when you're not actually there? You know, I'm sitting in my chair in my front room, but does upstairs really exist anymore? These are all difficult questions to sort of answer and prove, because everything that you is everything comes to you as stimulus, which is why I think that it's coming to you as stimulus, and so therefore you can't actually be there, or it can't really exist. It's only the stimulus of it that exists to you, a universal thing that is aware at this moment as an individual part of itself. I don't know whether any of that makes any difference. But anyway, yes, Christopher Hitchens, very interesting man. Sadly, he died too young, had cancer, and it would have been interesting to see somebody like that whose thoughts, whether they change over time as age creeps up and maturity. I mean, you know, I think he was 60 something, wasn't he? And it's, you know, it's very unfair when people died far too young, because as he said, he had plenty to do. Anyway, that was my thought for the day. I must drink my water and get this uploaded. Things to do, people to see, phone calls to make, letters to write, books to sell, etc., etc. You know the score. So thank you for listening, and goodbye.